Copyright notice. The contents of this podcast, including intro music, are copyright Phantom Femme. The podcast artwork is copyright Isabeau of WAGProductions.org. This labyrinth, the Phantom of the Opera, in Eric's times, and ours. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 8 of In This Labyrinth. I am, of course, your host, Phantom Femme. And, again, I'm sorry this episode isn't out quite as soon as I had hoped it would be. What can I say? All the usual offline life stuff, plus 50 students' assignments to mark. So, yeah, that held up the works a bit. Anyway, thank you all for tuning back in. Thank you hugely to everyone who's been listening since the beginning, right from episode 1. But also huge thanks to anyone who is tuning in newly for this episode, or maybe who tuned in newly just last episode and is coming back for this one. Thank you. Welcome. I have to say, it's really awesome to watch my download stats keep going up. That does my little podcaster's heart and ego and self-esteem good. Because, yeah, on the podcast website at least, it looks, if I'm reading the stats correctly, like I'm up to over 100 downloads by now. So, wow, thank you guys, that is awesome. Please keep doing it, please keep spreading the word. And, yeah, I realized I forgot to plug last episode that In This Labyrinth is now also on iTunes and Google Play. So, yeah, if you're on those platforms, please do subscribe there to the show. And, of course, please also leave a rate and review, because that will help boost the show and help more people find it and help more people listen, which would be lovely. So, having said all that introductory stuff, I have what I hope will be a really awesome and interesting episode for you all today, in which I'm going to talk about Red Death. As many fans and listeners out there will know, one of the more famous scenes in the original LaRue novel, and of course it gets picked up and made even more famous in the ALW stage musical, is the masquerade scene in which the Phantom crashes the party dressed as Red Death, riffing on the equally famous story The Mask of the Red Death by Edgar Allan Poe. And so what I want to talk about now is the way that the masquerade scene and the Phantom's appearance as Red Death in both LaRue and the Lloyd Webber stage musical, yeah, plays with, plays on, riffs on, as it were, and really puts an interesting twist on the original story by Edgar Allan Poe. So, as horror buffs out there will likely know, The Mask of the Red Death is a short story that was originally published by Poe in 1842. And at that time, he published, it was published as so many short stories and novels were, in a newspaper, in a magazine. And at that time, in that first publication, the title was The Mask, M-A-S-K, of the Red Death, a Fantasy. And then he published a revised version of it later in 1845 with the title that's now become standard, which is The Mask, spelled M-A-S-Q-U-E, of the Red Death. And as the Wikipedia page, which I'll put a link to in the show notes, oh, by the way, the show notes or the bibliographic reference notes from the last episode on Obsession are up, by the way. If you go to the blog section of the podcast website, which I'll give the URL of at the end, you can find them there as a blog post. And the references, the links to the references that I'm going to mention here will be put up in the same way. So yeah, as the Wikipedia page on Mask of the Red Death points out, the original 1842 title emphasizes the figure of the Red Death, it himself, whereas the revised title, the revised 1845 title that's now become standard, emphasizes the masquerade ball setting of much of the story. And I think that's kind of interesting in light of what Phantom does with the story. So the short story itself is about a prince named Prospero. He's called a duke later on in the story. And interesting that he's named Prospero. It's been pointed out that that may be read as a reference to Shakespeare's The Tempest. Anyway, so Prince Prospero's land is being ravaged by a terrible plague that's come to be called the Red Death because of the way that its victims bleed in its final stages. And it's a terrible, terrifying plague that kills like this within half an hour. And so Prince/Duke Prospero's response to this is that he calls together 1,000 of his friends, courtiers, etc. They assemble all the food and entertainment and servants they could need, and they shut themselves up in one of Prince Prospero's palaces. It's described as an abbey, but he clearly owns it as one of his palaces. And they literally weld the gates shut once they're inside, thinking to shut themselves in and the Red Death, the plague, out. So, after they've been partying along like this for about 6 months, Prince/Duke Prospero decides that they should hold a masked ball, a masquerade. And it's still only for him and his special guests that he's locked up in the abbey/palace with him, no outsiders invited. But, so they do hold this masked ball, this masquerade, and it's quite a wild party, with a lot of extravagance and grotesquerie. And Poe gives quite an extensive description of this, and he gives quite an extensive description of the suite of 7 rooms in which this masquerade, this masked ball, is being held. But suffice it for now to say that each room is a different color, starting from a blue room in the east, at the eastern end of the suite, going to a black room with red stained glass windows in the western end of the suite. And in that black room is a giant ebony grandfather clock that chimes the hour in a very solemn and sonorous manner and kind of creeps out the guests for just that one little space of time. But then once the clock stops chiming, they shrug off their momentary unnerve and go back to their revelry, to their wild partying. Until the clock chimes midnight, when a new guest mysteriously appears. And first of all, they're all unnerved because they have no idea how this new guest got in, because of course the gates to the abbey/palace are welded shut. But then they're also shocked and repulsed and horrified because this mysterious guest has had the effrontery to come costumed as a victim of the Red Death. He's wearing a funeral shroud and he's has the look of a dead face and he's got blood on his face and on the funeral shroud like a victim of the Red Death. And his costume is unnervingly realistic. And Prince Prospero and all his guests, Prince/Duke Prospero and all his guests are just deeply offended and infuriated by this, because although there's been a lot of grotesquerie, a lot of people coming in very grotesque and risque costumes, As far as they're concerned, this is beyond the pale. This is an effrontery. This is going too far. Because, of course, they've locked themselves up in the Abbey/Palace to lock the Red Death out and kind of to forget about it. So to have someone actually come dressed as a victim of the Red Death, yeah, they're all totally livid and their sensibilities are completely affronted and they're all furious. And so Prince Prospero orders the mysterious guest arrested and they're going to seize him and hang him from the battlements at dawn. But the mysterious guest flees, chased by Prince Prospero and all the other guests, through the suite of rooms that the party's being held in, all the way through to the black room at the west end of the suite. And there they all corner the mysterious guest and fall on him and tear off his mask, only to find it empty, to find there's no one inside the costume. And then they're all truly terrified, and then they become even more terrified as they all start to drop dead of the Red Death, finally ending with Prince Prospero himself, even as he has his sword drawn on the mysterious guest. So, this story, and of course, yes, I will put a link in the show note references to where folks can read it online, is generally understood as an allegory. It's generally understood and treated as entirely, purely symbolic. And when you read the story, it kind of lends itself to that sort of interpretation because there's a lot, or at least there's thought to be, a lot of symbolism in the way that Poe describes the masquerade, the guests of the masquerade, and the rooms that it's held in. And also, the characters are very two-dimensional. Even Prince Prospero is very two-dimensional. There's not really in-depth character psychology or character development given. The characters are all very flat. Even though Poe gives a lot of very vivid description of the setting, the characters are very two-dimensional. And so because of that, at least from what I've seen, the stories tended to generally be interpreted allegorically and or interpreted as a kind of symbolic commentary. So, for example, it's widely interpreted as being about how death ultimately comes for all of us, how none of us ultimately can escape death, whether we're poor or whether we're very rich. And relatedly, I've also heard it interpreted as a kind of a class commentary on how the rich don't care about the poor and shut themselves up in their gated communities and party while the poor suffer, but how death and disease ultimately even come for them in the end. So yeah, I've also heard it interpreted as kind of a class morality tale parable. So then this story, Mask of the Red Death, gets referenced in Phantom starting in the original novel. And we know, it is known, that LaRue was an admirer of Edgar Allan Poe. So it's entirely likely that it's a direct reference, that LaRue had read Mask of the Red Death, at the very least in translation. And so he incorporated a reference to it into the novel of Phantom, you might say from first-hand knowledge of the story. And this is really interesting because in incorporating his reference to Mask of the Red Death into Phantom, LaRue kind of puts a twist on it. And as I said before, I think that twist is picked up and continued in the ALW stage version. They sideline the issue of literal death and disease that's sort of the obvious focus of the Poe story, and instead bring out other themes that are other issues that are there in Mask of the Red Death, but are less explicit. And just as an aside, the reason I'm sort of leaping straight from the LaRue novel to the ALW stage version and kind of lumping them together is firstly because most of the intervening film and stage versions except for the 1925 film, notably, which I haven't seen yet because it's a silent film, and I'll need some help with that. But other than it, most of the intervening film and stage adaptations of Phantom leave out the masquerade scene. And those that don't, I'm not familiar enough with yet to talk about knowledgeably. But also, I feel like the LaRue novel and the ALW stage version do similar things with the masquerade scene and with the Phantom as Red Death. They put the same kind of twist on it. And so I think it's fair to talk about them together. So the first thing they both do is to take the masquerade out of the realm of the allegorical and symbolic and bring it into the realm of the absolutely real. By which I mean that this masked ball is not being held by undeveloped two-dimensional characters in an unspecified land long ago and far away, but by fairly well-fleshed out characters, at least the main characters are, with whom we've already had some interaction before they get to the masquerade, in a real-world setting, Paris of the late 19th century. And that, especially in LaRue, where the masquerade is explicitly stated as being held around Shrovetide, which is the day before Ash Wednesday, Mardi Gras, in French traditions, explicitly links it with the long tradition in European cultures of having masquerades, masked balls, as part of the sort of festive blowout before the penitential season of Lent started, that were basically times of legitimized misrule, times when the usual social rules didn't apply. So as long as the party lasted and everybody was in costume, classes could mingle, people could have encounters with people with whom it wouldn't normally be considered socially appropriate. You could basically break the rules in this kind of ritualized setting. And again, I'll include some links to references on this in the show notes. But yeah, this is a custom that goes back at least as far as medieval times. But this tradition of masquerade misrule has also received a lot of critique, a lot of criticism, because as many scholars and historians have pointed out, although it gave people an experience of freedom during the party, once the carnival was over, once the masquerade was over and everybody was out of costume, it was back to business as usual, and people were expected to return to obeying the usual rules of class and gender, etc. So many scholars and historians have argued that while these masquerades might have functioned as a sort of a let-off steam valve, they didn't really do anything to affect lasting long-term change. And indeed, it's even been argued that they in fact upheld and supported the status quo by letting people let off just enough steam so that they never really got pissed enough to demand substantial change to their conditions. And in a way, although I don't think it was intentional, in fact, I'm pretty sure it's not, I think that those critiques of the masquerade tradition in European culture kind of get at the twist that first LaRue in the original novel and then later the ALW stage version put on Mask of the Red Death. And the tie-in there is the second change that happens from the Poe story to Phantom, which is, of course, that in Phantom, unlike in the original story by Poe, there is someone inside the costume of the Red Death. And in this case, he's not dressed as a dead victim of disease, but in fact as a regal or, at the very least, aristocratic figure all in scarlet, who is identified as Red Death only by the fact that in LaRue, it's embroidered on the back of his cloak. It says, "Touch me not, I am Red Death stalking abroad," unquote. That's how D'Amatos translates it. And of course, in the Lloyd Webber stage musical, you don't see whether or not that's embroidered on the back of his cloak. You just see the Phantom appear in this fantastic scarlet costume. And I guess you wouldn't know he's supposed to be Red Death unless either you'd read the LaRue novel and or you knew it was a reference to Edgar Allan Poe. But so here, the Red Death isn't so much a personification or an embodiment of death and disease as he is an actual person in a costume. And related to that, of course, and I guess this counts as a third change from the original Poe story, there's no plague raging, right? This masquerade is not held in the context of hiding from a literal disease. And what these changes do is that they shift the masquerade scene in Phantom from being about literal death and disease, as in the original Mask of the Red Death, to highlighting the theme of the grotesque or the monstrous, which is definitely there in the Poe story. Poe makes a point of describing how Prince Prospero's masquerade is full of outlandish and grotesque costumes, and he kind of hints that the party is a little debauched. But nevertheless, in the Poe story, the theme of the grotesque or the monstrous is kind of subsumed under, or at least it seems to me that it's usually read as being kind of subsumed within, the theme of death and disease, the meditation, if you will, on death and disease. And so what LaRue does in the masquerade scene in Phantom, and I think the Lloyd Webber musical picks up on this brilliantly, is to kind of clear away the theme of literal death and disease and bring the theme of the monstrous and the grotesque forward. And of course, the masquerade scenes in LaRue and the ALW stage musical also foreground the issue of masks, of disguise. And I would suggest that what LaRue's and Lloyd Webber's masquerade scenes give us is a contrasting, a juxtaposition of what those themes mean to or how they play out for the regular people, regular Parisians, versus what they mean for and how they play out for the Phantom as a person who lives with disfigurement. Because for the quote-unquote normal Parisians attending the masquerade, it's a chance to play at being in disguise and to play at being the monster. And LaRue somewhat hints at this in his descriptions of the masked ball, but the Lloyd Webber musical really brings it out, both, of course, in the costumes for that scene, but also in the lyrics to the song Masquerade. So, for example, quote, "Masquerade, seething shadows, breathing lies, masquerade, you can fool any friend who ever knew you, masquerade, peering satyrs, leering eyes, masquerade, run and hide, but the face will still pursue you," unquote. And I'll put more extensive quotes from that song in the show notes. But of course, although neither version mentions this directly, we know that the quote-unquote normal Parisians, after the party's over, can take off the costumes, take off their masks, stop being the monster, and resume their place in society with all the relative safety and comfort and privilege that that involves. But then in both versions, of course, the party is crashed by the Phantom, for whom being the monster, being masked, is not a game. It's his life. As someone living with a severe disfigurement, he constantly struggles against being seen as the monster, as the grotesque, and of course for him, wearing the mask is not a fun party favor for a night, it's survival. And both LaRue and the Lloyd Webber musical make this juxtaposition absolutely brilliantly, because in LaRue, although Eric is wearing the Scarlet Red Death costume, he's gone to the mask ball unmasked. He's made his actual Death's Head skeletal face part of his costume. And of course, none of the other partygoers clue in to the fact that that's his actual face. They just think it's an incredibly realistic skull mask. And of course, they get a delightful frisson of fear from such a quote-unquote realistic quote-unquote mask and are impressed at how realistic it is. But of course, they would be shocked and horrified and repulsed if they realized or found out that that was Eric's actual face. Now, the reader hasn't been explicitly told at that point that that's the Phantom's actual face. You don't find that out explicitly till the Apollo's Lyre chapter, although an astute reader might have guessed it by that point. But when you are told later in the Apollo's Lyre chapter that that is his actual face and not a disguise, you're also told that Eric's been wearing a mask literally since he was born, or at least since he was very young, to hide it because of the way people react to his face. And then in the Lloyd Webber musical, the masquerade tune is kind of a leitmotif that reoccurs several times throughout the show. It's the tune that the Monkey Music Box plays during the prologue, and of course, just before the first unmasking scene, just before I Remember / Stranger Than You Dreamt It. You also hear it just after All I Ask of You in the orchestral line leading into where Christine sings, I Must Go, They'll Wonder Where I Am, which line itself is a variation on the masquerade tune. Which is weird. I haven't entirely come to a satisfactory understanding of the significance of that. And then, of course, there's the song Masquerade itself that opens Act 2, at the end of which the Phantom crashes the party dressed as Red Death. In the stage musical, though, he doesn't have his unmasked face on display as part of his costume like in LaRue. Instead, as I understand it, he's wearing a sort of Death's Head skull mask that covers his whole face, rather than the usual white half mask that you see in the rest of the show. Even so, though, because of course we've seen the first unmasking back in Act 1, his appearance at the end of that scene, at the end of the masquerade, really starkly contrasts his reality with that of the quote-unquote normal partygoers. And then the musical really drives the point home brilliantly by having the Phantom, near the end of the final lair, reprise very slowly and poignantly the opening line of the song Masquerade that had been sung very loud and upbeat at the beginning of Act 2. Quote, Masquerade, paper faces on parade, masquerade, hide your face so the world will never find you, unquote. And of course you hear the Monkey Music Box play the tune just before that one more time and realize that it's been playing that tune all the way through the show. And you hear in that moment that those words have a profoundly different meaning, a profoundly different reality for the Phantom than they do for the quote-unquote normal partygoers up above. Because that's basically his life. He doesn't get to put the mask, put the monstrous, put the grotesque on, you know, once or twice or three times a year at party time, and then take it off and resume a quote-unquote normal, relatively safe, respectable place in society. Because, as I said earlier, he's going to be seen that way most of the time, seen as the monstrous, the grotesque, most of the time, without his really having much control over it. He can control it somewhat by wearing the mask, but as I'll explore more in a future podcast episode, that's double-edged. Because Although it hides his deformity slash disfigurement, it still calls attention to his face and to the fact that he's hiding something. And so while it's a shield, it's also part of what isolates him. So what I love about what LaRue and the ALW stage musical do with the masquerade scenes is how they take Poe's Mask of the Red Death idea and inadvertently, because I'm pretty sure this wasn't conscious, put a disability twist on it, which is awesome. It's one of the thousand reasons I love Phantom so much, because, yeah, being seen as other, as grotesque, even as monstrous, is a reality that many, if not most, if not all, people with disabilities and disfigurements slash deformities live with every day, as is the reality of having to decide if and when and how to pass, if passing is an option for you, and or when and how to disclose your disability, deformity, disfigurement, health condition, whatever, i.e., when it's safe to unmask. And indeed, in, I believe it's the final chapter of his book Disability Theory, disability scholar Tobin Siebers talks about how masquerade is perhaps a more useful metaphor for disabled people's issues around disclosure than is the metaphor of the closet that's been traditionally used by the LGBTQ community and borrowed by many disabled activists. And of course, I'll put the bibliographic reference for that in the show notes. But I think that that relevance of masquerade that Siebers is getting at really comes through powerfully in Phantom. And as I said, that's definitely something I'll explore further in future episodes. So I hope you've enjoyed this discussion of the masquerade scenes in Phantom in LaRue and the Lloyd Webber stage musical. I hope you found it interesting. And as always, I would love to hear your feedback on this episode or on any other episode. Or if you have ideas for topics you'd like me to talk about on the show, I'd love to hear those too. And also, if you'd like to be on the show, if you'd like to come on the show and do an interview, please definitely do get in touch because I'd love to have you. I would really love to hear from fans with perspectives different from mine because I obviously have my own thoughts and ideas and opinions, but I'm only one voice. I'm only one fan. And I'd really love for this show to showcase and be a space and platform for the diversity that's out there in the fan community. So, yeah, if you want to get in touch with the show for any of those all very wonderful reasons, you can tweet at the show at ITLPodcast. Or, of course, you can follow the show's Twitter at ITLPodcast. You can also like or follow the Facebook page or join the Facebook group, both of which are the title of the show, In This Labyrinth, The Phantom of the Opera in Eric's Times and Ours. And if you search In This Labyrinth on Facebook, you should be able to find both of those, the page and the group. Or you can send an old-fashioned email to inthislabyrinth@yahoo.com. And you can also, as I mentioned back at the beginning of the episode, subscribe to this show now on iTunes and Google Play. And I'd be ever so obliged if folks would, if you like what you hear here, if you would subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play, whatever app you use. Actually, right now that's only iTunes and Google Play. I'm working on Stitcher, but it's not there yet. But yeah, if you could subscribe on iTunes or Google Play and tell others to subscribe on iTunes or Google Play, that would be really awesome. And of course, once you subscribe, if you could leave a rating and review, that would be really awesome too, because it will help boost the show in the search algorithm, whatever, and therefore help more listeners find the show, which would be wonderful. And last but not least, you can find all the references, the URLs, and other bibliographic notations for all the stuff I refer to in this episode in the blog section of the podcast website, which is at https://inthislabyrinth.fireside.fm/. And I hope you'll stay tuned for next episode, which hopefully I will have out in a relatively timely manner. For the next couple of episodes, I'm going to be doing some book and fanfic reviews just to make things easier on myself, because this is a super busy time of year with the end of semester marking and, of course, family stuff leading up to Christmas. But also, I thought I'd do some book reviews to give folks Christmas present ideas, either to get for fellow fans or to hint for yourselves. So next episode, I'll be reviewing the book The Angel's Shadow by Louise Ann Bateman. So I hope you'll stay tuned for that. I hope you'll enjoy that, and I hope that'll be really exciting. So thank everyone again hugely for listening, and have a great and phantom-filled time till next episode. Disclaimer: the opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the presenters and do not reflect the views of the host, Andrew Lloyd Webber, Cameron McIntosh, The Really Useful Group, or any other person or entity. In addition, this podcast is not in any way affiliated with Andrew Lloyd Webber, The Really Useful Group, Cameron McIntosh, or with any other person or entity involved in the production of any version of Phantom.